Welcome to The Future is Female Powerlifting. A show where women of all strengths can explore the world of female powerlifting. I am your host, Heidi Donnell, a 60-kilo powerlifting gym owner, and each episode we bring you an inspiring interview or message to help you unlock your true inner strength potential. Thanks for tuning in.
Aloha, my beautiful friends, and thank you for joining me for episode numero 7. Why did I say it like that? And I speak Spanish. That's the worst part. Number 7. Numero 7. There we go. That's much better. And today, we have a very special guest, and it's somebody who I am stoked to call my friend, a homie lover friend. I felt like, you know, Julia and I have known each other for years on the web. Okay, on the internets, and we never really met in person. So we knew each other, all this kind of stuff. And then when we met, I felt like I knew her forever. She has this wonderful personality. She's one of those people that is always wanting to help people, and she's super approachable. So if you ever meet her, you just got to go up to her and be like, hey, I know you. I heard you on Heidi's podcast. What? Anyways, we get into it with Miss Julia today, and we start off with talking about her wedding. So Julia, formerly Julia Ladusky, is now married. And at the time when we recorded this, she was not married. So she is now Miss Julia Anto, married to Christian Anto. And this couple, let me tell you guys, is a fabulous, fabulous couple. They are wonderful, caring, funny, intelligent, experienced coaches and people that I'm happy to say that are my friends now. And we really kind of talk about the wedding and how low maintenance she is and how she's not a bridezilla, which is me too. I'm like, let's just get married. That's just how I am. And she's the same way. So it was nice to kind of go over those things. We also talk about her training crew out in Indiana, and she works out of Ileana Power Asylum, and she's really close to the Chicago area. So she has a good amount of people that come up and train with her. And Christian, and she loves the training crew she has right now. So she kind of gives them like props. Now, if you've never heard of Julia Anto, she is an Elite FTS coach, and she has been with Elite FTS for many, many years. She started off as a Division I strength and conditioning coach for Buffalo University, which is crazy to think, because we get into it a little bit about her starting off at 21 years old, people, in this position. And let me tell you, that is amazing. Ask yourself what you were doing at 21. Okay, I know what I was doing. I was DJing and I was getting crunk in the club. It was like, you know, from the window to the wall. That was me right then. That was my time. That was my high time. That was my 21 years old. So I love that she's been in the game for so long, 20 years, guys. Now, not many people know, but, you know, Julia started off as a geared lifter, meaning she used a squat suit. She used a suit in order to powerlift. And a lot of what we see now is raw powerlifting. You might have wraps, you know, you have wrist wraps, knee wraps, of course, but that is not geared lifting. So you're not wearing any gear. And so she had to kind of really learn how to squat and bench. Well, benching wasn't as difficult, but she had to learn how to squat again. And it was a very difficult time for her. And she goes into that a lot. One part that I love is she talks about how to train using gear and how she had to train using gear and how that's different for raw. Now, Julia is a conjugate training follower. So she has always used conjugate as her programming. And she kind of goes into what max effort is and dynamic effort and the benefits of having a max effort and straining in a max effort. So listen for that, because we really get into that a little bit. Now, there is some higher level advanced talking about programming today. And I love that we got into this conversation, because we don't always get into that. And Julia and Christian are doing a conjugate and triphasic marry, like themselves, because Julia was a conjugate program follower and Christian was a triphasic follower, which is a program designed by Cal Dietz, who is a strength and conditioning coach. If you know anything about strength and conditioning, that world, not powerlifting, everybody knows Cal Dietz, and Cal Dietz created the triphasic training. Now, they decided to marry the two together, which made like a clusterfuck of training that is crazy. And she goes into that a little bit, and it's awesome for you guys to hear, because we don't often get that, this sort of advanced talk of training. So I hope we didn't lose you. So stick with us a little bit. It gets good. Now, Julia is always walking around at a low body fat percent. If you see her, she's pretty shredded all the time. Let me just tell you. And she's a mother of two. And we talk about how she balances eating healthy and, you know, eating healthy for her kids and how that is, because I struggle with that. And I feel like a lot of moms struggle with that. It's not like your children are going to eat, you know, all the healthy foods. Forget about it. I have to hide everything in like something, you know? So we get into that a little bit and what maybe tips that we do. Now, one of the cool things that Julia is doing right now is a blog on Elite FDS called What I'm Seeing and Why It's Wrong. And this one in particular is about the booty. And Julia has a booty, let me tell you. Okay, so if she says anything about butt, you should be following it. Okay. One of the cool things that they are doing right now is a free training program. So Christian, I have the link in the show notes. Christian is offering a free beginner strength training program. And let me tell you guys that you should just try it. Even if you think you might be a little advanced, even if you maybe are doing all these fancy things, I think that there is a real area for just basic strength training. And there's nothing wrong with trying a basic strength training program, because usually the stuff that gets you strong is not that fancy looking, okay? I will have that in the show notes, as well as their second part of that free strength training program. And this episode is brought to you by my gym, My Little Strength Haven, Core Strength and Performance out in Huntsville, Alabama. And if you guys don't know about my gym, it's a small little intimate place that we just want to help people get a little stronger, live a little leaner, and have fun doing it. And every Saturday from 9 to 11, we have a free open gym for anybody who powerlifts or does any kind of strength training program. So if you do any kind of strength sports, we offer free open gym for you guys. And it's really so that we can all kind of get together and lift and build a little community of people who just want to be stronger. For more information, you can follow my Instagram, CoreSMP, The Future is Female Powerlifting, or you can visit our website at www.core256.com. And please, if you like this show and you like what we're doing, leave me a review on iTunes. It helps grow the show. And for all you wonderful ladies out there, I'm going to send you a free sticker. Now, I only made like 20 of these things. So if you leave a review, screenshot that mofo and send me over your address, and I will send you a sticker, because I love you for taking that time to leave a review, and so that I know that you guys are enjoying this. Now let's get it started with Julia.
So I always like picking your brain, because you make it easy to sound, you know, like you break it down.
Oh, good.
That is good. Good. Because good. Kondrophasic, not easy to understand. I was reading his, which blog was it about? I forget. It was about transmutation. It's one about transmutation. And I was like, even he says, now this is where it can get confusing.
Right. And I even, because we talk about it too, and we, you know, we could talk about this in the podcast, but like what he calls certain, and that's the hard part is all of these terms have gotten so like convoluted over the years that some people call them different things, and it really is just a name for something. So,
right. Yeah. I mean, it's whatever you make of it, but so we'll go into that for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
And we'll just start it off from here. And of course, how's everything going with the wedding planning? Are you excited? Are you nervous at all yet?
Not really. No, I'm definitely more excited than I am nervous. Yeah. Like, we're just ready to like do this. I'm the type, I'm laid back. Like, not that I want things to go well and smooth, but I'm not like, everything's gotta be so perfect.
Yes. And yeah, bridezilla. Like, you're not a bridezilla.
No, like I don't need extravagant like decorations. And like, we were going over everything with the coordinator, and she was like, okay, she's like, do you have a wedding program? I was like, no. She's like, are you guys blowing bubbles when you walk out of the building? I was like, no. I was like, she's
blowing
like, are you
bubbles?
You know, well, you know how like people, instead of like throwing like bird seed or rice, people are doing like bubbles. People are doing sparklers now.
Okay, I've seen sparklers. Sparklers.
So she's like, are you doing bubbles or sparklers? And I was like, no. Like, we're just gonna like, I don't. Neither of us really care. It's not that big of a deal.
Oh my god, you are exactly like me and Devin. Like, if it's gonna be too complex or just cause a little bit of a headache, then we're like, no, it's just It's not even, no, it's not even worth it. I mean, that's why we got married with 17 people on the beach.
Right, exactly.
We didn't even have a canopy. Like, we probably should have had some sort of canopy because everybody was kind of hot, you know?
Right.
But
right.
It's a public beach, and they say, oh, if you have a canopy, sometimes people can say stuff. And because technically anybody can be there. So we're like, eh, it's only going to be a couple minutes anyway, you know? And so,
right?
Yeah,
right.
I mean, I love the picture you guys have of your rings. Like, I can tell it's getting closer because of the way the posts become. You know, and it's really sweet, and it's amazing that you not only get to share this life with him, but he really is like your partner in the gym and everything. And I saw that the post you had written about, it's the first time since you guys been training together that you didn't train with him because he was gone for his bachelor party thing that he was doing. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's so crazy. That must have been kind of weird.
It was. I didn't really enjoy it very much.
Yeah, because he's intense. Like, if you guys don't know, for our listeners, Christian is intense in a very good way. And Julie and I have talked about this, that she, you know, she likes it. You know, he's not like he's slapping her around, but he sure is all up in there. Like, let's go up, up, chest up. You know, he's calling all the right cues, which I think if I had that often, I would miss it.
Well, and it's funny you say that, because for a very long time, I don't want to say I didn't have an intense atmosphere, because I did. There were definitely times that had a good atmosphere of training. For the last 3 years, really, I trained on my own a lot, so I didn't have that. So I just kind of just get used to sort of, I guess, amping yourself up.
Yeah.
But it's totally different.
Yeah.
It's completely different when you have somebody there, and I've said this before in a post, who is just as excited about you hitting a lift, or more excited than you are, makes all the difference in the world.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Our training crew has grown to be something really cool. So.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit, because I noticed you were talking about how you feel so privileged that you're... I didn't really take a look at how close you are to Chicago. So when you had Chicago powerlifters, I was like, huh, and I looked, and you guys are right there on the border. So you have Chicago lifters that come and train with you sometimes as well?
Yeah, actually, what's really cool is we had, we currently have a guy who was in our group from Learn to Train over the summer.
Oh, nice.
Who is from Chicago, so he drives down almost every Saturday.
Wow.
And
how long does that drive?
He's like, it's probably about a little over an hour, about an hour for him, a little over an hour for him.
Awesome.
But one, to have the atmosphere, two, to have the equipment that we have. So we've got all the bars and everything that he needs to squat with, and just to have spotters and people there to coach and help. So that's been pretty cool. So probably don't, I mean, Chicago itself has some pretty good, powerlifting gyms. So I don't think we get quite as much of a carryover, but every once in a while we'll get a few that will, you know, kind of pop in for a visit or, you know, come down. So we're definitely trying to, not necessarily take anybody away from those gyms, but just let people know, like, hey, if you are down in this area, if you're in the south suburbs, or if you're, you know, close enough, or you're passing through to Chicago, like, stop by, because we, you know, we've got the atmosphere, we've got coaching, we've got the equipment. So, yeah.
That's fantastic, because you sometimes won't get all of that. So you might get a crew, but you might not have all the specialty bars, or maybe you have all that, but you're not really training with anybody in a group. And I think you make a great point by saying, you know, it's nice when you have somebody who's invested in your progress the way he is, because you can see it. You know, and I think that not only makes a good coach, but makes a good partner, because they know how much you put into it and how disappointed you'll be if you don't hit it, and how happy you'll be when you do. That's why when I was training with Susan, I have pictures of her in the background, just like, once I hit something, she's like, wow, she's hitting me. Yeah, that's it, Heidi. And I'm always like laughing, because inside I feel like death, you know, I'm like,
right.
And then afterwards she's so happy. And I always laugh, because I'm like, Susan, you make me feel better about it. You know, at the end, it's like, man, it's nice to have somebody else there that's like, fuck yeah, you did great. That's awesome.
Yep.
Let's keep it going. So I guess for our listeners, you've been on, you know, a lot of podcasts. Well, not a lot. You've been on a few where they break down who you are, but you guys don't know a little bit about Julia, I've known Julia, well, I guess I've known you off and on for a couple of years on, you know, the virtual world, which I think how everybody meets nowadays. Nobody really meets organically anymore.
Right.
But we had face-to-face met at Learn to Train a few months ago, which was at Elite FTS, and we just hit it off. I mean, Julia and I clicked. And one of the things that I admire about Julia that maybe not a lot of you know is that she was a former strength coach for Boston, correct?
Buffalo.
I'm sorry. Buffalo University. And yep. She had did that at 21 years old. And we've talked about this before. Like, I want you all to think about what you were doing at 21 years old. I sure as hell don't believe any of you were the strength coach for a major university. And I know you talked about how, you know, that was a great experience and how you were able to meet the right people. And a lot of that has to do with putting yourself out there and networking a bit, because you probably wouldn't have landed that job had you not networked with the people you did, correct?
Absolutely. And to be honest with you, it completely started with transferring schools my senior year, switching from athletic training to a more focused exercise science. When I transferred schools, I went to Ball State, which at the time had a really good powerlifting team, and that's when I was just starting to get into powerlifting. That led to me and two other guys on the team traveled over to Columbus. We went to one of Dave Tate's Elite, you know, at the time it was actually a West Side seminar. And that branched into that whole path of knowing Dave and being involved with Elite FTS, but then being there also branched into an internship that I did, if people are familiar in the sports performance world, with Mark Verstegen and his company called Athletes Performance. He's got a couple facilities out on the West Coast, but I could have easily done an internship at my local, like, YMCA.
Right.
But I didn't, like you said, I kind of wanted to branch out and, sounds cliche, but sort of shoot for the stars in that aspect. Yeah. I'm like, if I'm going to do an internship, like, I want to go somewhere and do something, you know, go somewhere big where I can really learn. And yeah, so I went from Buffalo. I did an internship in Arizona, and that internship is literally what landed me the job at Buffalo. So yeah, like you said, all of those little tiny connections and things that came together at the right time kind of formulated my path.
So what motivated you to take that risk? Were you just like, screw it, I'm going to go for it kind of feel?
A little bit. Again, now you're getting into really the details. At the time in the powerlifting team, there was a graduate assistant at Ball State who was kind of the coach of the powerlifting team, and he was the GA for some of the sports teams. And so as I was kind of interning with them and getting to work with some of the sports teams, I helped out with gymnastics and baseball and some of those other teams. He had mentioned that he had done a internship at a completely different facility in Florida that Mark was a part of, and then Mark branched off and did his own thing in Arizona. So I was like, oh wow, tell me about this internship that you did. And his was at it was a place called IPI down in Bradenton, Florida at the time. This was, gosh, almost 20 years ago. So but yeah, I was like, oh man, that sounds really good. And he kind of was, so that really sparked my interest in sort of getting out there and putting myself out there, because I wanted to be in the college and at the time, even in the professional setting. So yeah. I was like, if that's where I want to go, I got to start making my way that way. I can't stay local. I can't just, you know, work in some health club down here. That's not going to get me there. Yeah. So I really had to think about where I wanted to be and what was going to get me there. Yeah.
Yeah. That takes a lot of guts. And I think that at a young age, that's hard to muster up in a field that's dominated by men.
Yeah. Well, and I was a little naive thing at the time.
Which is great, right? I think being naive helps you because you have no idea and you're not scared. You don't have these preconceived notions of what things might be because you just don't know.
I didn't know how male dominant it actually was. I mean, I knew it was just right. Because when you go to a gym, you mostly see guys. So I knew that the weightlifting aspect of things was very male dominant, but I didn't realize that the collegiate strength coach field was very male dominated, that obviously the professional sports is very much so. I didn't know. So I didn't know any better, which was, again, kind of a good thing at the time. So I was like, hey, this sounds fun. I get to go live in Arizona for a few months. Yeah. Like, let's go do this.
Oh, but that works out good. And I think that's it's funny how that happens because you just don't know how you'll be received. You just don't think that anybody's going to talk about you. You're like, no, it is what it is.
What is it? That's what I did. Yep.
So now that you've been transitioning, so for those of you out here, Julie has always been a geared athlete for many, 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 many years. And you went raw. When did you go raw?
Gosh, I started competing in like 2001 and obviously made a transition from very basic single ply all the way up through multi-ply gear, all the way through 2015. 2015 was my last geared meet, and then I did a raw meet in 2016. So,
and right now, it's been how has that transition been for you?
Very different. And I will honestly say that it was the first probably year and a half were extremely frustrating.
Why is that?
Just everything is different. A lot of raw lifters, because geared lifting has sort of kind of lost what it used to be, mm-hmm. a lot of people don't really understand gear. And so raw lifters go, oh, you can just throw on a squat suit and you can magically, you know, squat more weight or magically bench. Like, no, there is a lot to it. There is a specific skill. So in coming out of it, the reverse side of things, I had to learn how to squat again. Yeah. Like, literally, I had to learn how to squat again. Everything changed. My mechanics changed. So not only did my mechanics change, now muscle groups that I'm recruiting have to change. Yeah. It all was very different. Bench was a little more similar, just because in my training, I still did a lot of raw benching in my training for gear. Mm-hmm. But squatting was very, very, very different for me. And that was frustrating because I would, you know, put on, you know, something as simple as 185. And I'm like, why does this feel so heavy? Right. Why does it feel awkward? Why do I feel like I can't get this right? So it was a process of kind of taking 5 steps back, yeah. a couple steps forward, few yeah. steps back. Yeah. So
how did the training go with gear? So do you normally train raw for a while and then work into your gear as you peak in, or how does that normally work? Cause I've never trained in gear, so I actually don't know how you incorporate that into a training cycle.
That's a great question. So the years that I trained in gear, I followed very much a kind of the old school, quote unquote, West Side program, what people would call a conjugate style programming, that we had max effort days and we had our speed days. So our max effort days were generally speaking raw work. Didn't use any gear. So we would squat and bench all raw, but it was never just squat. It was always a low box or a high box or a wide stance right. or a specialty bar. So never was I just putting a straight bar on my back and squatting. So the movements were always very different. And that's where you can see where bench was always a little similar. So with bench training, we would always do like a floor press or a board press or some right. type of other pressing movement. And then our speed work was generally always done in what I would call a small amount of gear. So we would wear briefs for our speed squats. And our speed deadlifts are obviously our speed bench was all done raw as well. So you're right in that any of the off season work was just training, max effort and speed. We would go through various cycles of that. And then as you got ready for the meet, then you start putting on the gear. You start, you know, about 12 weeks out, you start getting your bench shirt on, you start, you know, does it fit? You start feeling the groove of that. You start working, doing some board training with that. You start putting your, you know, your suit on with the straps down for a few weeks. Then you start putting the straps up and you start to get to used to what that feels like. So, there is that transition period that you do. Because just like anything else, you have to practice in it.
Yeah.
So if you're not practicing in that gear, you know, for a good 10 to 12 weeks, you're things can get a little sketchy.
Yeah,
so,
you're probably
yeah,
setting yourself up for a little bit of hard times as it gets closer. So as you let in, did you start using more bar work? So you're more straight bar squatting as you got into the gear and closer to the meet? Okay.
Yeah, and what's interesting is back then we actually, a lot of our geared and our straight bar squat work was done on speed days. So we would do a lot of squats with bands. We would go through cycles of that, of, you know, ramping up for 3 weeks, deload for a week, ramping up. So we had a lot of various band tension cycles going on with that. And then we would, as we got closer, we would start just doing just straight regular squatting to feel out the gear, to make sure you can hit depth and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But
yeah, that's awesome. I mean, it's what I kind of figured, you know, when you're trying to add things in there. And, since I've never worked with gear, I was like, I wonder what Julia I mean, that's years and years of that work. And so for those of you who don't know Conjugate, I'm sure many of you are familiar with Conjugate, but a lot of the weights program is a max effort and a speed day. So they break it up. And within those times, what Conjugate likes to do is to add different variables. So you're not just bar benching. You're not just bar back, back squatting. The idea is that we change it up a little bit. And so you change either the bar, you're changing the way you're squatting. So box squat, high box, low box, like she said. You're adding bands, you're adding accommodating resistance, which is your bands or your chains. And that way your body does not get used to that one stimulus, correct?
Correct. Right. Yeah, so you're not getting used to the stimulus, and you're also, we would always try to choose exercises that, frankly, that we weren't good at.
Exactly, you gotta work on your weaknesses.
Exactly, so if you know your, weak out of the hole on a squat, you're probably gonna do a box squat slightly below parallel that's going to challenge that. So the point, what people need to understand is that the point of max effort is purely to strain. Is you need to be able to get to the point to where your highest set is done, that you are grinding that sucker out, because that's a central nervous system stimulus.
Yes.
And so that was our whole goal on max effort day. It didn't matter what weight was on the bar. It didn't matter how many chains were on the bar. You just had to grind and give an all-out maximal effort.
Yeah, and I think that people miss that the point is to have that grind. And that's when you need to build that. And so if you're not at that stimulus, then you're not maximizing the program right. You need to have that sort of grinding if you're going to be in your max effort days.
And you're right. And I see a lot of beginner, and obviously for physiological reasons, but even some intermediate lifters that will get to those weights where they start to grind and they give up and they stop.
Yes.
And that's, not only is it a physical thing that you need to build, but it's a mental aspect that when you get under a heavy weight, you don't quit.
Yes.
You just keep going. So, I think in a lot of the training that we've seen, especially on social media, I think that true, and what I would call true old school max effort, has sort of lost its way. It's hard to find that in the midst of all the other programs and things that are out there now.
Yeah, I could definitely agree to that. I could see that. Yeah. So speaking of Conjugate, let's talk a little bit about your training that you're doing right now. So you're doing a mix of Conjugate and Triphasic. So for those of you who don't know what Triphasic training is, it's from Cal Dietz. And Triphasic has usually been used with athletes, so sport athletes. So maybe you can kind of go into what you're doing right now. Right now, you guys on the transmutation phase? Are you out of it right now? Or are you still in it?
So technically, we are out of the triphasic portion. So I'm going to kind of backtrack and start from the beginning. So triphasic is typically, we go through the three phases of a lift. So there is as people know, there's an eccentric portion of the lift, which on the squat is lowering yourself down. You have an isometric portion of the lift, which is pausing, right? It's holding, it's stopping. So just like on a bench press, pausing on your chest. And then the concentric portion is actually the lifting of the weight. So what Cal has done with that style of training has broken it down to those things. And you train those specific qualities for a certain period of time. And he has it set up so basically you end up doing 3 weeks of eccentric work, 3 weeks of isometric work with pauses and holding, and then you do 3 weeks of concentric. So,
which
Christian
is crazy.
Yes.
Let me tell you guys, if you haven't seen what this takes, it sounds so like simple, like, just eccentric and concentric. But if you've ever done like an isometric pull against, like safeties.
Pin.
Yeah. Gnarly. So you actually set up the safety above the bar, you're pulling the bar up, and you're concentrically holding it against the safety. It's taxing. I mean, to say that, Lisa, it's very taxing. So what were you going to say, Christian? What?
Oh, well, Christian had a lot of success with triphasic lot with himself and a lot of other athletes. And so he really likes utilizing some of those principles. I have, obviously, as we just talked about, a very strong background with conjugate training.
Yeah.
So especially after the Learn to Train and kind of, he had played around with it a little bit, and hearing Dave and Nate and everybody and kind of getting my background info on it, he was like, I feel like I think he realized too that he was missing some aspects, and max effort work was part of that.
Interesting.
Some of the training that he had done over the last couple of years, he with other coaches that he was working with, and even just his own training, he was kind of missing that true max effort component.
Mm.
And so that sort of kind of sparked a thing of going, I think I need to get back to true max effort training. So him and I kind of put our brains together and was like, how can we do this?
Yeah.
Smart and effectively. So what we did was we made the first 9 weeks of our training was that conjugate phasic. So conjugate and triphasic together. So we would have our max effort work. We would pick an exercise and it changed every week, just like old school conjugate training was. So we would pick, say, safety squat bar, to a box, whatever it was. And that was our max effort work. So we would go all out on that. Then as our second exercise, we would make that exercise the triphasic portion. So whatever we did for that day, we would do eccentrics with that. We would lower the weight a little bit. So we would drop the percentage down, work eccentrics. And that was our second exercise. And then we would move to our accessories. So the second week, new max effort exercise. But then we would still do eccentrics after. So that was our 3 weeks. And then the 3 weeks after, we would, again, same thing. We were still finding new exercises to do. So I don't even think over the course of those 9 weeks, we did the same max effort exercise once. Not once.
Wow.
There was some type of variable that was different, whether, like you said, whether it was the box, chains, bands, something was different. But then we implemented triphasic after. So the next 3 weeks, we would do isometric holds at the bottom of a squat, on our chest for bench and things like that. And then the third phase was the concentrics. Now this got interesting because what we wanted to do was, we would do our max effort work and then we wanted concentric was the way we wanted it to work was it was our ability to be able to move a heavy weight fast.
Okay.
And so say for instance, we did safety squat bar, box squats, and let's say I did 200 pounds. Now, that was my max for that day. So now what I'm going to do, what we do is we would put reverse bands. For anybody who doesn't know what reverse bands are, you're hanging the bands from the top of the rack, putting it under the bar. So now as you can see where this is going, so now it's making the weight a little bit lighter, but it's allowing us to still get the stimulus of the heavy weight.
Yeah.
But we focused on, even though it was heavy, we focused on moving that bar as fast as possible for those 5 reps that we did on the concentric phase. So, it really worked well after that phase. That was, I'm going to tell you right now, Heidi, that was probably one of the hardest 9 weeks of training I have ever done.
It
ever.
Looked rough.
Of all the years of geared lifting,
really?
Of all the years, it was like, we would get done and be like, oh my gosh.
What were you thinking?
Yes. And, and then you went into, so that, what you'll read in some things is we call that our accumulation phase. We are literally accumulating strength during that phase.
Right.
So now we're in what you just mentioned, which is called our transmutation phase. Okay. So what Christian likes to do is make a transition period from all of the specialty bar work, because we didn't use a straight bar.
Yeah.
All of that specialty bar work. Now we're going to go into a straight squat bar, a regular bench bar, a regular deadlift bar, but we're going to use a fair amount of chains. So we're still going to free squat with a straight bar, but we're going to have chain weight. So now it's kind of that transition period of getting into more sport specific, contest specific stuff, just not fully straight weight yet. So we do that for 3 weeks. We're actually on our 3rd week now, and then we're going to move right into our peaking phase, which is going to be no chains, no bands, just all competition lifts. We got all of our percentage work leading up to the meet, and then...
And that would be your realization phase? Is that what it is? Right, the realization phase. Okay. Because, you know, my husband was reading up on triphasic, right? We had talked about that. And, it's complex. So for those of you out here, this is not a beginner, maybe not even an intermediate. It takes somebody experience to understand triphasic, one, and then to take it and mutate it the way you guys did and, like, made a baby out of it with conjugate. But it makes perfect sense when you're talking about it right now, like the way that you were able to manipulate with the bands and how you had it set up, I think is great. I'm excited to see how this goes for you guys.
Yeah, and there's a few, I mean, that's the simple, and I hope people, you know, people listening can kind of see the big umbrella picture. There's so many little nuances that we did in there, Heidi, that were, that after this training is done and we kind of see how it goes, we'd like to really put out either a program or a nice article explaining it, because we, another point that we had to kind of mess with was deadlifts. And we would always max effort squat on our max effort days. Mm-hmm. And as you know, heavy deadlifting can be extremely taxing to do week after week after week. Yeah. So we decided to do over the course of the entire training program was to alternate. Our Fridays, we would always speed squat, but then we would alternate. So one week we were speed deadlifting, the next week we were heavy deadlifting, speed, heavy, speed, heavy. So it allowed us to kind of keep that speed component in there to work on our speed off the floor.
Yeah.
But then alternating weeks still be able to get in something heavy in our hands as well. So that was just kind of another little nuance that we changed and manipulated a little
bit. Yeah, I think that's important because when you sort of have to listen to your body. So, I mean, you're knowing that this is going to be too hard for me long term. So you're talking about weeks of this. Yep. So those sort of things are implemented and you plan for it. So it is going to be interesting to see how it comes out, because you're finishing up the last couple weeks of the mesocycle, right?
We literally do some 3-rep max work next week, and then we do percentage work after that. I mean, we're only like 5 or 6 weeks out from the meet,
Well, I'll in the show notes, I'll put what triphasic is. I'll have links to it, and I'll have links to your guys's blogs, because if you guys don't know, Christian, her fiance, and Julia write for Elite FTS, so they have their coaching logs where they talk about not only their training but different things. And Julia's had coaching logs for many, many years. So you can go back there. You can see her bodybuilding, which is another aspect of your life that is so awesome. Because I'm going to tell you right now, like, I'm not in bodybuilding mode anymore. I'll do some hypertrophy stuff, but you look like you're still in bodybuilding mode. You keep a very lean physique. And I think you have phenomenal physique. Not only are you strong, but you keep that going. And how's that been for you? What is your normal nutrition like? How do you balance all of that? Because you're also a mom, so that can be very difficult.
It is. It's been challenging. I will say that towards the tail, and there was a period that I'm trying to think what year that was, 2016 maybe, that I like got done with a show. I was kind of rebounding, bringing my food and nutrition back up, and I hit a wall to where I literally did not even want to think about food. And I'm sure you've been there before. Oh, yeah. And people who have been involved in the sport before, like I don't want to eat. I don't want to eat turkey or beef or chicken. I don't want to eat any of that.
Tilapia, get that stuff away.
So for a while there, I just ate. I'm smart enough to know I need protein. I need good carbohydrates. I need all my, but I just ate. Yeah. I didn't want to like think about it. It was too stressful for a while. And even I still run into periods every once in a while where I'm like, man, I'm struggling to eat this from an enjoyment standpoint, like to where I was like choking food down, and I don't want to have to do that. I don't ever want to have to do that. So, so when I'm feeling good, I'll kind of stick to, kind of just good foods. We make a lot of rice. We make a lot of sweet potatoes. If I'm cooking a ton of meat, I'll put some aside. The kids and I will have tacos, things like that. You have to find things that are enjoyable for the kids. And it was super funny. And Christian's probably going to hate me for this. So when he moved up from Memphis over the summer, he was really big on meal prepping, which is awesome. And I love him for that. Like Sundays, we cooked and he had all his meals ready in the fridge and ready to go.
Oh, you goody two-shoes meal prepping.
One day he goes, I was like, okay, this is great. And I was like, well, I'm probably going to have to stop at the store later, get a few things for the kids. And he was like, they can just grab a meal out of the fridge. And I was like, they're not taking turkey and rice to school.
Does he laugh about that now? He must laugh about that.
I mean, it was kind of a joke, but it was like, they don't want to eat that stuff. Like, so I try to make things as normal for them as possible. There are some nights, honestly, that I toss a frozen pizza in the oven and they have pizza for dinner.
But, I agree. I think that's one of the things that I think as women get into fitness who do have kids, try to find a balance And I think I'm always trying to find that balance still, you know, and I have one child that loves sweets, loves anything bad. So, oh, it's just like, if it could be like highly processed and highly palatable, why not? Because it tastes fantastic. You know, we all want Doritos and cool ranch Doritos. I mean, it's just, I understand that. And I'm also not a Nazi about it, because I've had people tell me like, oh, do your kids actually eat that? And I'm like, yeah, dude, I'm not on lockdown. Like we just try to make better decisions. So what would you say are some things that you do that maybe help you keep your house maybe a little healthy? Like for us, we really try not to buy junk food. And I would say that we don't often eat out, even if it means popping in a pizza at home, you know, we do often try to just make food. So it is a lot more work for me. And Devin is on this, I don't think I told you this, but he's like on a specialty diet right now because he's got, you know, all kind of stomach, you know, I think a lot of people have gut issues. Yeah, I think we've talked about that. So he eats like a small child, I would say. Yeah. He has to eat no gluten, no thing. Yes. So it's just like really bad, but he's had a great response. He's been feeling a lot better, but that does limit, right? So I can't just pop in some noodles like how I used to. Even so I'll put it for the kids. So some of the things that I try to do is keep, you know, just cooking at home. Trying not to cook, and then not giving in to when my kids are like, oh, I want this, or oh, I want that, or oh, I am like super strict when we go to store. If you ask me more than one time for something, you're not coming with me anymore. You're going to stay home and you're going to put away the dishes.
Exactly.
That's what's going to happen, because I don't want to hear this the whole time we're here.
Exactly. And so what I do is when I do take them, one, I try not to take them, but two, if I do take them, I will say, because for their school lunches, and that's the other thing too, is I pack their lunches every day.
Which
so
is great.
I know what they're getting at lunch.
Yeah.
So I say, okay, you get to pick out one thing. So sometimes, like, you know, my son will pick out a certain kind of, you know, chips that he wants, whether it's Doritos or something like that. Cool. Okay. Hannah picks out, my daughter picks out something. And so they do get a little bit of something that I know they enjoy. Yeah. So whether that's, you know, fruit roll-ups or, you know, whatever. So sometimes they get kind of those little snacky things. But there's always – I try to do a good job that when they come home from school and they want a snack before dinner time, right? It's going to be a few hours before dinner's ready. Can I have a snack? Sure. Find something in the fridge. Because generally speaking, the fridge, right, is your – non-processed stuff.
Yes, so exactly.
Grab a yogurt, grab an apple, grab a banana. There's, you know, all kinds of stuff in there that you can find. And that's kind of been sort of one of our rules as they've been growing up, is that if you're hungry for a snack, get something good to eat.
Yeah. First. And that's exactly what we do. And it does take a little bit of putting your foot down. You can't bend as a parent, because I know I have one of my daughters will stand there And she'll look. And I said, listen, we picked out the yogurts together. So you like this yogurt, and it's not like the one that has like chocolate mint anymore. You know, I can get lazy on my part, because then I'm like, oh, that looks healthy. It's Chobani. But then you look at it, you're like, no, dude, you're being lazy. You're not looking at what's actually in it. You know, come on. Yeah, it's yogurt. But when she tells me, it's like having mint ice cream, like that I know.
And you're like, no.
Wait a second. I don't think I did my research well. But that's it. You know, we have them. We have a yogurt. We have oranges, apples, bananas. You can even have a little sandwich if you want. If it's, you know, really late, we're going to eat at 7 o'clock, because sometimes we do and they come home at 2:30, 3 o'clock. That's totally fine. You can have cheese, you know, but you're not, you know, we're not going to keep Oreos in the house. We're not going to keep tons of bags of chips. I do buy like better chips, like some of the sweet potato chips, and sometimes like even popcorn I'm okay with. Like, you want some popcorn? Yeah, we can buy some popcorn. As long as it's not like
pretzels. I'll always err on the side of pretzels than like potato chips.
And of course we never really carry soda ever. I mean, we just don't have it, you know, and it's not that they can't have it. They can have it once in a while, but it's just not one of those things that
you buy and keep in the house.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Well, I wanted to get into my favorite part, which is what I'm seeing and why it's wrong. And I like the new one. Okay. And last time we had talked about your benching, but this one I like in particular because it highlights your assets and parts that I've always liked. I'm sure Christian liked it. And if anybody has ever been to Julia's page, you'll know what I'm talking about, because she's got a phenomenal booty. Okay, people, phenomenal. And it was built, okay? This butt is fabulous. It's just phenomenal. You have great glutes. You have a great physique. But this particular chapter, this post is called What I'm Seeing and Why It's Wrong. And she has a few of these on Elite FTS's site, so you can go in and see it. Now, of course, put it in the show notes so you guys can read up. But what I liked about this one was developing your glutes. And you kind of went into why isolation or, you know, exercises such as donkey kickbacks or specific one glute activity might not be as beneficial as doing other activities. So maybe you can get into that a little bit more. Why did you start off with this and why do you feel it's important?
Well, believe it or not, it was actually Christian's idea to do a video and a series on this. And part of it is just because for anybody that spends any amount of time on Instagram, especially, that's what we're sort of inundated with is, especially in the mainstream fitness world, is building your booty. And you see all these girls doing these. And I'm not going to say there are no wrong exercises.
Correct.
There are no bad exercises. Okay.
Agree.
But when you look at it from a standpoint of, especially beginners who are just starting out, I think it's easy to get lost in that sort of marketing shuffle of, oh, well, this girl, she has a great butt. So, and this is what it looks like she does. So that must be what I need to do. So the way we attacked it and what I go into in that video is, the glutes are just like any type of other muscle in that they have to be loaded to grow.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are just kneeling on all fours and kicking your foot up in the air for thousands of repetitions, I mean, it might burn, but it's not, you're not stimulating the muscle to go, hey, I need to grow and adapt. I need to grow and adapt. And so, and it's been kind of a funny ha-ha joke for the last 20 years that I've been lifting and doing this with people like, how did you grow your butt? And I'm like, I squat. I squat, I deadlift, I do some lunges, you know, so those stiff-legged deadlifts and all of those things. So think big. So I talk about big compound exercises that where you can progressively overload over the years, get them to handle more weight and more load. So if you're not familiar with the kind of the physiological side of things, a muscle responds and a muscle adapts from continuous overload. So if you do these, you know, I have a current client who for years was doing some of the, you know, popular beach body type workouts, right, that are at home where you're doing a lot of body weight squats,
right,
which can be a great start for people to get started. But eventually your body gets used to squatting
with no your own body weight.
Exactly.
Correct.
Exactly. So there has to be a loading component to it. And so that's kind of the main gist. And from a performance standpoint, and some of those other little isolation exercises, they can be great for activating your glutes, right? So if we talk about banded abductions or, you know, fire hydrants and donkey kicks and all those things, they can be great to warm the muscle up, to get them firing. Sometimes we need that mental focus to know what we're working and where we should be feeling things. But generally speaking, your big exercises should be loaded and you should be constantly trying to get them to handle more weight. And that's really, honestly, there's no magic behind any of those exercises. There really isn't. So that's kind of the gist of that one. And just getting, I want women to know that there's, the mainstream fitness world is really good at kind of twisting those things.
Oh yeah,
but
you're being very nice. I'm gonna say it's a lot of bullshit. It's a lot of bullshit, and that's what I'm gonna say. See, you're good. It's a lot of bullshit, and I run into this all the time. And the problem is, if somebody has a great booty for whatever reason, which I find a lot of these Instagram models and fitspos who do have phenomenal booties, a lot of them have had stuff to it. So especially if they're out of this country, you know, I find a lot of competitors who are out of this country in Brazil and different parts of Europe all have some sort of augmentation. So whether that is a butt implant or some injections, you know. And you know what? To each their own. If you want to augment your butt, go right ahead. But I think that there is a level of responsibility that you have as somebody who is putting these programs out and things out, implying that you can get this butt by doing this sort of exercise. And I think that that was important that, you know, you guys highlighted that. And it's funny because Christian suggests that, but Devin always gets annoyed by that. He's always like, it's so stupid. Like, what do you, you know, like, it's true though. You know, those things do have their place. And I agree that you know, there's really no exercise that I would say is useless.
Right.
But if you're talking about progressing somebody who also probably doesn't do and has no base strength as well, all those things will only aid to growth hormone. We're talking about systemic. So one of the major things about squatting and deadlifting, you get an overall systemic adaption, right? So we're talking about your body stimulates more growth hormone when you're in this training phase.
Yep.
And
yep.
If you're not there, you're not really maximizing, like you said, the potential of what you could do. And so when you're doing these small, extra small little kick, 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 or side, and all these little things, you're not capitalizing on. So those things can be good in conjunction if you wanted to add them in conjunction with some sort of squat routine, something
Absolutely.
That would, but to do them by themselves is just, it's not going to get you anywhere. And in fact, I think that there's a lot of, you know, problems when they start doing it. I think you were talking about that, you know, where you're hyperextending and you're just trying to kick your leg all the way up. Right. Versus
yes.
actually really trying to stimulate that muscle in particular.
Absolutely. And that's a huge thing for the glutes and really for any body part. But that specifically
yeah.
is that you see these women go to the gym and they do those kickback exercises when many times they're overusing their low back
yep.
or they're recruiting too much hamstring or whatever.
Yep.
So there's a lot to be said for doing an exercise correctly. So if you're going to do them, you really need to make sure that you know how to connect your mind to that muscle to make sure you're getting the absolute most out of it.
Yeah. So if you guys are out there trying to build that booty, keep doing what you're doing if you're a power lifter. And maybe if you're not a power lifter who's listening, add those kind of big lifts in there, because if
yep.
if you aren't, you're missing out on what can happen for your body and how it can develop. But if you want to add those things in there, go right ahead. I mean, I've done them. I've done a whole bunch of leg booty things. I've done a bunch of things that I now would never do too, you know, looking back. And before we end, I added a new thing in here. It's called "What the Hell Was I Thinking?" So I want you to think back to the 20 plus years you've had in training, Ms. Lizewski. And I want you to think of times where you were like, now you look back and think, what the hell was I thinking? And for me, as we talk about this glute conversation, one of the things that I used to do was stand up on the pull-up machine and push down on the pull-up machine.
Yeah.
You know? So if you guys can imagine, you're on the pull-up machine, you put your one leg up there. I know all of you have seen this. So you put your leg up there and you start pressing down and you're getting this motion. And is it useless? No, I'm sure there's some sort of something to it. Is it the smartest thing to do? No. And I think I was in that, I bought into that time where we try to take all the exercise machines and face the other way and do one leg and do it backwards. And then you're going to do it to the side and you're laying on the floor, but it's like a leg press. And yeah, I fell into that. Hey, you know, I'm not perfect. I fell into that too, but I try not to rule anything out. So I've tried everything. I would have to look back and say that that was a dumb thing that I did. Would not be doing that anymore. And no knock to anybody who's doing it now. It's just not what I would include into my training right now.
Correct.
So do you have anything that you can remember,
you know,
that you laugh about?
I am sure that I have done some really silly things. And I'm trying to sit here and I'm going through all the gyms I've trained at. I'm trying to visualize myself. And I am sure. In fact, some of them are simple as oh my gosh. Well, I will say this. Okay. Here's a good one. When I was in college and I just got started, in powerlifting. So I had been powerlifting for maybe about a year and was involved on our, you know, powerlifting team in college. I mean, this goes a little bit deeper than this, but I would get up in the morning and I would do cardio at like 5:30 in the morning. And then I would go at night and I would, you know, try to get stronger. And like, I was in this phase of, I was in a phase of being very self-conscious about my body.
Mm.
And so I was in the middle of trying to be a very strong competitive power lifter. I was not eating very well. And I was doing way too much cardio. So I kind of went through that where I look back now and I was like, wow, what are you doing? If you're trying to be a competitive powerlifter and be as strong as possible, why are you doing so much cardio, girl?
You know, what's funny is I feel that that still resonates with a lot of people. I do feel that a lot of people, especially now, and I've had this conversation, that we want to be strong, but we also still have that image of how we should look, especially when you see buff women out there who are pulling in, you know, barely any, and they look, you know, they have a fabulous body and they are strong. I think that whole comparison that we still have on now with social media, it's still so hard. So it's nice to hear that you can look back and say, wow, I'm glad I'm not there anymore. I don't have that mindset anymore, that you've transitioned and sort of grown from it. Well, yeah. Julia, of course, this conversation could go forever. And I'm going to hold you to this because we're going to meet with you after your wedding and we're going to do something else. We're going to talk about something else and I'm excited for you. And I did want to let everybody know that you guys are, I don't know if you've already done it, but the beginner template that you're offering for free on Elite FTS, is it already out there?
Yeah, so it's up there. You have to go to, if you go to EliteFTS.com, go to Christian's training log. Okay. It's pretty simple, to be honest with you. We just wanted to get something out there for people. So go to his log, find the one that says free beginner template, copy, paste it, put it, use it on your own, you know, put it on your phone, do whatever you need to do. So we're going to be putting out a few other templates out there.
Yeah, he said a powerlifting one, maybe like an intermediate powerlifting one next. Yep. Nice. I think that's fabulous. So this particular one he was saying is like a progressive overload, just your standard basic. And I would recommend something like this to more people. I think that people often go to an intermediate or advanced sort of training
too soon,
and they are beginners. And if you, we've talked about training age before. If you've been training, you know, less than a couple of years, your training age is really still kind of low. So maybe you were strong, maybe you pulled 300, or you know, you're doing something. You've only been training for 6 months. Really, your age is still low, so you're still in that beginning building phase. So you could benefit from a program like this. That is basic and base. There's nothing wrong with being basic. Maybe if you like pumpkin spice and you're, that's me and I'm a basic coffee girl, like when Christmas runs around, I am on the pumpkin spice, everything, you know, that's probably the only basic that man, but basic programming I think has a benefit. And so I thought this was awesome. So I will link it in the show notes so you guys can click on it and just find it. And then in a couple weeks or a couple months, you guys will have that second one, probably after you get married.
Yes, we're only 2 weeks away.
Oh my God, is it 2 weeks? Like, I know the date, but I didn't realize what today. Yeah, today's the first. Oh my gosh, so exciting. Oh my God. Okay, well, I'm glad to see all the little cutesy Woman Crush Mondays and Man Crush Mondays and all the cute little posts that you guys got going. You make me feel like I'm 16. I'm like, oh, I feel like I can do one of my husband. I love you. I love you.
He's going to be like, what are you doing?
Yeah, he will. He'll be like, okay, what's going on?
What do you want?
What do you want? It's usually the other way around when he starts doing that because I'm the cheapo. So if he wants something, I always know because he's like, hey, babe, so I got you this thing. And I'm like, oh, it's because you bought yourself one too. You bought me that shirt because you bought yourself the other shirt. So now you don't want to feel bad. So you gave it to me.
Smart.
Yeah, and it works. So because I'm like, okay, that's nice. I mean, sweet. But anyways, I will let you go. And thank you again, Julia. This was great.
Of course.